Hi, I'm Naomi. I'm 37 and a new mum. And when I was on the fence about becoming a parent, all I heard was, but it'll bring you love beyond anything you've ever known. And now I've got a baby. It's, you think there's no alone time now? Wait till they can follow you into the loo. Now, despite deciding to baby, there's still loads more to find out from both camps. So here's a podcast on the Secret Recordings Network, where I chat to baby wanters, baby rejectors, and everything in between to see why we decide to baby or not to baby. In this episode, I chat to Freddie, a transgender dad who carried and gave birth to his son.
No one looked at me and saw like a pregnant man. No one would have put those two things together. It was just too unthinkable. Not in a negative way. It's just like, that's not going to occur to anyone.
And I'm joined on this journey by my sister and best friend, Camilla. How you doing?
Very good. Always here for the journey.
Ah, it's lovely having you along for the ride. Now, before we talk about Freddie, who, by the way, I don't want to kind of big this up too much beforehand.
He's incredible.
Then it'd be an anticlimax, but genuinely, this interview is and was, when I did at the time of doing it, one of my favourite interviews without a shadow of a doubt. We'll get to that shortly. But before that, I want to ask you a question, Camilla, about babies. So, Eleni...
Surprise!
Eleni is just over 5 months old. And at the minute, she's just the cutest, right? She is so smiley, happy. She's being pretty okay with sleeping and is just all the joy. Is there such a thing as a honeymoon period with babies?
I think you probably go through various honeymoon periods with babies.
Okay. Because at the minute, I am literally like, when are we doing another one? Let's do it immediately.
I know. And even Mum said to me the other day, okay, and Naomi's saying she definitely wants another, Camilla.
That's what Mum was saying to me. I was like, I know.
It is a really nice age. You are right. It is a really good age. Because I remember Chester at that age is when we took him on holiday. And they just start to do more things, give you more back, be more cute, be more funny. But someone once told me the danger zone is one. Because then they get to one and you go, my baby's not a baby anymore. Quick, have another baby.
Okay.
I can't say that particularly happened for me.
You say that didn't happen for you, but timing-wise, that's kind of what happened for you.
No, timing-wise, coronavirus happened for me and I thought, I can't get a frigging job during coronavirus, so I may as well be at home, sick all day and have a baby.
Perfect. Now, Freddie.
So Freddie.
This interview, oh my God, I really feel like even just talking about Freddie, I'm like beaming love out of me for Freddie. And you hopefully will feel that. And not only will you feel the love, but oh God, what a mind-blowing education it is. I was shitting myself before doing this interview. Talking to a transgender dad who carried and gave birth to their own baby, it just felt like a minefield of many places where I could potentially put my foot in it and say the wrong thing. Crucially, it was, am I going to offend him? Because that's absolutely, obviously not what I would want to do. And I was so freaking annoyed because my first question, and I swear it was the nerves, the first question I ask is me putting my foot in it and saying the wrong thing.
Oh, but I don't think that he took it offensively at all. And also, these kind of subjects that have been so taboo and, you know, people don't talk about enough, people need to ask questions. Mm. And actually, I think most people are happy to answer those questions, even if it means you have put your foot in it a tiny bit, because it's just opening up the conversations that need to happen. And I feel like you and Freddie were like kind of besties by the end.
Oh my God, I'd honestly want to be best friends with Freddie.
Yeah, like, me too. We want to be best friends with all the people that you interview though.
This is true.
And I feel even weirder because I then start following on Instagram and none of them have spoken to me or ever met me. And I'm like, hi, I'm Camilla, this one in the background. Call me Freddie.
Hello, my name is Freddie McConnell and I am a writer and a journalist and sometimes a sort of consultant producer. And I am a single dad by choice. My kid is almost three. He'll be three next month. And I'm also transgender. And I carried and gave birth to my child using donor sperm.
So, I mean, where do we even start with this? So before we talk parenting, can you just explain a bit about your situation in terms of like the process of transitioning and how that went from you being born a woman and but not identifying with being a woman?
Sure. Yeah. I always find that phrase born a woman kind of funny because like no one is born a woman. It's a kind of funny thing that I understand where it comes from. But yeah, I mean, what we say is in the trans world is I was assigned female at birth and I was raised as a girl and I sort of expressed gender non-conforming behavior from a very young age, from about the age of two or three. But, you know, I was growing up in a time where the word transgender didn't exist and any idea around transsexualism or anything like that was extremely stigmatized and taboo. So those ideas never really felt like they could possibly have anything to do with me. You know, I was very happy growing up, had a very loving, happy family, but also had this constant low hum and rumbling of discomfort and confusion. And I just thought it would maybe go away with puberty and it actually just got worse with puberty. And then when I was at university in my 20s, I did come across the idea of transgender for the first time. And it was an incredible epiphany moment of revelation. And I spent about 2 weeks in a state of absolute euphoria on cloud nine, not really, no one really knew, but like I was just floating in my own little world of like realizing what trans was for 2 weeks. And then I came back down to earth with a bump when I realized that not everyone else might feel like this was such a positive discovery. So then I spent a few years waiting for an appointment at a gender clinic and sort of exploring how I felt and being sure and this and getting the support from my family and friends. And then when I came to the point of starting testosterone in my mid-20s, I was asked to sign a consent form that said as part of it that I would be rendered infertile by testosterone, by hormone treatment. And that was really scary on the one hand because I knew I'd always wanted to have a family. But I thought, well, I can just have a family in a different way and I will have non-biological children. And I know that this is what I have to do. I have to transition. I can't be a parent unless I'm, you know, happy and healthy in my own skin and in myself first. So it wasn't really an either or. I couldn't do one without the other. And then a few years after that, I was browsing YouTube and came across a video of a trans man who had been on testosterone for many years and who'd come off his hormone treatment in order to conceive with his partner. And he was like 8 months pregnant, I think, in this video. And it blew my mind and I was shocked and I was on the one hand really confused and a bit and kind of angry and like why had I not been told that this was possible? Who was hiding what information? Did doctors know this was possible and were they like lying or did they not realize? It seemed relatively, it's not common, but like within the US trans community, it was definitely a known thing. And there was lots more of it happening over there. And also I felt excited because I thought, well, I need to consider this. I need to figure out whether this is something I should do and could do. And so, yeah, after another couple of years of lots of soul searching and getting the support of one of my doctors, although being rejected and judged quite harshly by other sort of gender clinic people that had supported me up to that point. I paused my testosterone therapy, waited 6 months for it to be clear of my system and conceived really easily. I didn't have any fertility issues. I'd never had any pre-existing ones. Some trans men do, obviously like PCOS or stuff like that, but I didn't have any of that and testosterone doesn't cause infertility. In most trans men, it pauses their menstrual cycle. Although actually most trans men also still ovulate while they're on T, which is something that not a lot of people know. But yeah, once it's clear of your system, pretty much every experience I've ever come across, which is hundreds at this point, your system kicks back in and you can conceive naturally.
So do you think that they just tell you that as a kind of worst case scenario? Was it pitched to you as a worst case scenario? Or was it pitched to you as a, this is the end of your fertility?
No, it was definitely black and white. This is the end of your fertility. I don't think it was like, I can't say, it's really, really complicated to talk about because I think in order to understand that, you have to understand the context of gender identity care in this country, which is still pretty old fashioned. And it's not a conversation with the patient about what's best for them and how, you know, who they are and how to explore their identity. It's just if you're trans, you do this, and if you're not trans, go away. And trans for them is like a list of things. And, you know, and that means that your transition looks a certain way. So basically, when you're signing that consent form, you're saying that you agree to become infertile, because the assumption is that you will never stop testosterone. And within a few years, you will have this surgery, that surgery, and this surgery, and you'll be like, quote, a real man. You know, the community has come so far in understanding transness and all the variables of it, like much faster than the NHS has. So I think there's partly that. It's just like, well, you'll be infertile because the idea of you stopping testosterone to become pregnant is just unthinkable. But then I also do think that there is an assumption, which is there is no evidence for at all that testosterone does harm trans male fertility at some point, vaguely in the future, probably. We don't know.
Yeah.
I'm going to just say it does. There is no evidence for it. I know men who I've sort of talked to in Facebook groups who were on T for 10 years, 15 years, who came off and conceived naturally or through insemination or through IVF, if some people do need to do IVF, but that's not because of testosterone. That would be because of other issues. So yeah, it is really shocking. I know people who have had hysterectomies because they thought they were infertile and then had to go through a process of discovering that they weren't, probably, and they have had to grieve that. And it's just heartbreaking.
Do you think there's a degree of the doctors assuming that because you identify as male, mm-hmm. that therefore the process of pregnancy is associated with being a female thing and therefore mm-hmm. that you wouldn't want to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And on a very basic level, I can understand that assumption, but I don't think that justifies telling someone that they're going to be infertile when they're not.
Yeah.
One is an assumption and the other is medical advice. So yeah. The melding of those two things is really troubling. And also, I think doctors have a responsibility to be honest about the variety of trans experiences. The fact is that a majority, I don't know how big a majority, might be small or might be big, like of trans men don't have genital surgery. Many do. And those are the people that you tend to hear about. And that's where the focus is. But many, many don't, because it's a very complicated procedure. And there's quite a high rate of failure and complications and all this sort of thing. So if there's all these trans men out there in the world who haven't had lower surgery, who are like going to the loo every day, and we don't question their maleness because your gender isn't contained within your genitals, then I don't understand why it's such a big leap to think that if starting a family is really important to someone, that they might consider using their like hardware to do it. It might be difficult, and it is, like it's the hardest thing I've ever done. But for me, it was worth it. Like trans people we can do hard things. We can make difficult decisions. We are complicated. For me, it's like being a parent's really important to me. So
why was it the hardest thing you've ever done?
Because being a pregnant man is really hard. Like because going off testosterone was terrifying the first time I did it. I didn't know what was going to happen. I felt like I was undoing all this progress I'd made and sort of giving up the confidence and security I'd found. And also, you know, other people might misunderstand what I was doing. I just felt like a terrifying unknown.
Mm.
And then also, it's not so much the subjective experience of pregnancy that I found the hardest thing. It was more the fact that pregnancy, understandably, is entirely framed as a female experience or a woman's experience in the world. And I say understandably because, like, obviously the vast, vast majority of people who get pregnant and have babies are women. But mm. as a man going through that, as a trans man, it's incredibly isolating and scary and can be quite hostile sometimes, or can just be, yeah, lonely and isolating.
So two things, having just gone through my own pregnancy and childbirth and all that good stuff, but also from doing this podcast and talking to people who have been surrogate the surrogate host and who have used surrogacy, and the language around pregnancy and, you know, even things like going for the scan through COVID, it was only the mother is allowed to be present at the scan. And my friend who was on the podcast, who was the surrogate, was like, but I'm not the mother, I'm just housing the baby.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're saying only the mother can go in, well, you're not going to scan anything because she hasn't got the... So even things like that and all the kind of literature around birth and stuff is very woman, female, dominated, which I suppose to a degree you can kind of understand it. But I imagine that then throws in an additional complication when, like you say, you're already feeling a little bit isolated.
Yeah, like I said, it's understandable, but what I don't understand is the resistance to becoming more inclusive and representing the diversity that exists now that we know that it exists. And, you know, it can be done. There have been times when I've actually been really surprised by progress that's been made in a very kind of, in a way that like hasn't been drawn attention to because it's just part of the work they do. Like the HFEA, the authority that like governs fertility treatment in this country, they've got a full set of gender neutral forms for the entire process of IVF from start to finish. So they've got forms that you fill out if you're a woman going through that. And they've got forms you fill out if you are a man, and they've got forms you fill out if you need gender neutral forms. So even if you're a trans man going through IVF, you can fill out gender neutral forms. And if you're a trans woman going through treatment to sort of donate sperm or preserve your sperm, there's gender neutral forms for that. So like they did that without any kind of fanfare or fuss. And it's those kinds of things that could be done just to make the experience so much less intimidating and unwelcoming to gender diverse people.
How did you feel physically? So like you say, you were a bit kind of scared of coming off the testosterone after what felt like kind of a big journey to get to that point, to then coming off it and then becoming pregnant. Like, what did it feel like?
At the time I was working in a big office in London, and I found being around people really hard and having to like pretend everything was normal. I found that really hard. Coming off testosterone has quite profound emotional impacts. Similar, I now realize, to when cis men have low testosterone, you know, and they might have to take supplementary testosterone. So I felt quite low and lacking energy and just despondent and not myself kind of thing. So yeah, that was really hard even before becoming pregnant. And then when I was pregnant, it was all just really amplified. I actually found being off testosterone the hardest thing in terms of feeling dysphoria. So like it wasn't being pregnant that was hard. It was not being on testosterone that was hard, if that makes sense. Like that's what it felt like. If I could have been on testosterone, which you can't because it's dangerous to a developing fetus and no one should ever do that. But if I could have felt like my normal self and been growing a baby inside me, I'm sure I would have found it much, much easier.
So like at the end, when you're walking around kind of 9 months pregnant as a man, what was the reaction? Like what reaction did you get from people?
I didn't really. I carried very small. And also I think at the time, I don't know whether it would be the same now given the sort of sudden more increasing awareness of like trans male pregnancy, but no one looked at me and saw like a pregnant man. No one would have put those two things together. It was just too unthinkable, not in a negative way. It's just like, that's not going to occur to anyone unless, you know, perhaps if I had been carrying really big or looked super duper pregnant and didn't have facial hair and that, and hadn't like spoken to people so they couldn't hear my voice and that kind of thing. But as it was, as I was keeping a low profile, I was like staying home a lot. And, you know, because I was worried about having hostile encounters out there in the world. Maybe someone privately, silently did clock me, but like I never ever was aware of being read as pregnant.
But you know what? That makes me sad that you kind of felt like you had to stay at home and almost do it behind closed doors. I don't know if it was fear of being judged for it, but yeah, that makes me sad, because I remember going out and I carried quite small and I was so desperate to get a big bump. I was like, oh, I just look a little bit porky at the minute. I want, like, if I'm doing this pregnancy thing, which I sat on the fence for a long time, if I'm doing it, I want it to look like a bump. And then of course, when it turned into a massive bump, I was like, oh God, be smaller again, be smaller.
Yeah, it felt like a weird mix of like, it was good in the one sense because I felt safer. And also I was experiencing just like maybe just, even if I had had a big bump as a man, I wasn't experiencing the whole like people acting as though they owned my body. No one was appropriately touching me or anything like that. But yeah, so it's weird because on the one hand, you kind of, you know, we want trans families and trans parents and all sorts of ways that queer people make family to be more accepted and for there to be greater awareness. But on the other hand, like the stealthiness of it really does feel like a safety blanket, like a bit of a force field. So I couldn't really say whether I would have wanted that to change, because it might be quite scary.
Yeah. In terms of actually becoming pregnant, so you make a decision, I want to have a baby. Mm-hmm. How easy was the process of doing it?
For me, it was straightforward, and I conceived on my second attempt with IUI, like intrauterine insemination, and I had family support. You know, it was quite, I didn't have to try many times, so it wasn't too expensive. I had the people at the fertility clinic that I went to were very welcoming, you know, and all trans men who do this, non-binary people do it differently. My experience was, I would say anecdotally, it seems as though more trans men conceive at home, either with a partner or just through like turkey basting, as it were, and with donors or, you know, known donors. I think within the queer community, there's a lot more looking to the community and using known donors and that sort of thing, and creating families that are unconventional.
How did it feel when you got the positive result?
Well, it was funny. So the first attempt, when it came back negative, I felt more relief than sadness, which was so weird. But like, I think that goes back to this whole thing of, you know, this is really difficult to do as a trans man. So I had this wave of like, oh my God, I can just sort of relax and be myself and go to the gym and I don't have to think about this for another couple of weeks at least. So that was weird. And then the second time I was so convinced that it hadn't worked because of the timing. It was just like, I didn't really understand how any of the fertility treatment worked anyway. And I had sort of convinced myself that the timing hadn't been right and I didn't feel anything. So there's just absolutely no way it's worked this time. So it was mostly just total shock. And like, I had not prepared mentally at all for it to be positive, which is kind of classic. That's kind of what I do. I sort of process things after the fact. I mean, it was amazing. I think my mum was more emotional than I was. And then it was really difficult. I found it really difficult, really, up until I think when I could feel kicks and movements and see a little bit of a bump, it became easier a little bit, because I was like, okay, this is why I'm doing this. I just have to stay strong and get through it and it'll be worth it and all those sorts of things. But early on, it was just a bit terrifying. And then I felt awful the whole time.
Well, the thing is, pregnancy is such an assault on your hormones and physically anyway, regardless of any additional kind of complications, if you like, with the coming off the testosterone and everything like that. So I mean, jeepers, you really must have had a ride of it, because it felt like an intense ride for me.
I was just a mess.
And then, so childbirth, briefly, how was that?
So I was really lucky that my whole experience of pregnancy was topped off by a wonderful birth, and exactly the birth that I had hoped for and planned for, and, you know, relatively straightforward and a very positive experience, like total kind of my body just doing what it needed to do and being in the water. It's like, that was amazing, I think.
Did you get the kind of like the empowered, like I am a god moment?
No, I wouldn't say that. I would say it just felt like, I went somewhere else. Like, I wasn't really able to talk to anyone. I forgot that gas and air existed even. It was totally unmedicated, and that wasn't like a choice. It wasn't even conscious. I was just so on another plane of existence. It felt like better than the best drugs you could ever imagine. Whenever anyone tries to talk to me, I just wanted to tell them just shut up, because I was like busy and in my own world. I didn't want any chocolate or water. Like, they had to really, they told me at one point that my whatever it is, I really needed to drink something because of my your blood sugars or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And it was just like, how could you possibly be worrying about like Lucozade at this moment? This, like, you know, there's this mad thing going on. But obviously I was the only person aware of that. And I used some really simple hypnobirthing breathing techniques, which really helped me go to this other place. So it didn't feel like it was even me doing it. It was like this is just incredible. And
just like magic.
Yeah, just magic. Yeah, exactly. And hard, like, and painful. And but yeah, also very calm. My mum just sort of afterwards was like, she told me that she just couldn't believe. I'm quite an anxious person, and she's always known me as an anxious person and an anxious child. So I think she was totally blown away. She was like, what happened? Like, that was incredible. Where did you go? Kind of thing. And yeah. And I was like, wow, I had no idea. I wasn't expecting that to happen.
Yeah. In a way, I imagine, like, was it almost like a double, because the, you know, it's the finish line.
Yeah.
It's the finish line of the, well, kind of the finish line of the pregnancy part. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that everything that you have been through is about to hopefully pay off. Mm-hmm. But on top of that, for you, I imagine there's like an extra level of it, in that you can go back on the testosterone and you can resume what was some form of your normal life from before.
Oh God. Yeah. I mean, not while I was in labor and pushing. And I mean, that period was one of the very few times in my life when I didn't have a kind of internal monologue, anxious analysis going on at all, which was was one of the most amazing things about it. But then soon after that, oh my God, I was so, so excited by the idea. You know, and it was a little bit, I was going to wait until all the pregnancy hormones settled. So I was going to do it safely and according to the advice I've been given by my endocrinologist. But I did end up, I think the advice was to wait for like 8 weeks. And I think I was actually back on T on like week seven. And I remember going to the appointment for that with my mom and my newborn. And I thought I'd have to get a prescription to take to my local pharmacy and wait a little bit longer. But actually, he just offered to give me my first shot there and then. And I just burst into tears. It was like the most amazing feeling. Like, and I was like, oh my God, I did it. Like, this is the end of this process. Can I swear?
Yeah, of course you can, go.
I fucking did it. Like, how incredible. And then going back and see, it felt like picking up where I'd left off. And within like 6 months or so, it was like I'd never been off it. And I had my family and I was being a dad and I was loving it. And so I was like, hell yeah, that was worth it.
And am I right in thinking that you're trying to do it again?
yeah, I am.
after everything you've just said.
yeah, it's funny though. It's been so helpful over the past 3 years now, I guess, since my kid was born, to suddenly have so many more role models to look to in the community whose journeys I've been able to follow. Most recently, a guy called Danny in the States gave birth about 2 weeks ago. And
amazing. I follow him as well. Absolutely amazing.
I mean, I've learned so much from him, and I'm sure, you know, I've heard him say that he followed my story, and I'm just like, what on earth could you have learned from me? You are the most confident, proud, strong person I've ever known. So that definitely makes me feel stronger right now. And actually, I do just feel much more set. I'm like in my mid-30s, you know, with that weird confidence you get like in your 30s, and I've got my own home and I've got my kid, and I just feel much more like I know what I'm doing this time around. And actually, weirdly, like lockdown and COVID has been a blessing in disguise on that front, because I'm not in an office, I'm not having to be out and about much. We can just sort of be in our own little world, and so my dysphoria just feels like it's being not as triggered as it was the first time around. And yeah, I know that I can come through it and get back to normal relatively quickly as well, whereas before I just didn't know that. So
yeah. Where are you at in proceedings?
I've created some embryos, so I'm doing it slightly differently this time. I'm creating embryos again just to sort of, I felt like I would give me a bit more control over the timeline, and it wouldn't be so open-ended like it is when you do insemination.
Okay.
So I'm doing that, and so the next stage will be a transfer, and I'm not sure exactly when that's going to happen, but it will be soon.
Just so we're clear, still want to be best friends with Freddie.
He is incredible.
Absolutely incredible. And the experience you have going through a pregnancy as a cis woman, which I hope I've got the right lingo there again, like I'm gonna say the wrong thing, but the experience that you go through in your body anyway is bonkers and feels really, to some people feels very natural, but for me personally didn't feel super natural. Whereas to go through that whole experience, absolutely incred.
I was so shocked as well by the conversation around the hormonal treatments and basically being told that then you can't have children because they are assuming that by transitioning, you don't want to have a child.
Ridiculous.
Like, I feel really ignorant for not hearing about that or picking up on that before.
No.
That's unbelievable.
There's been loads of stuff in the news of late about lots of hospitals changing the wording that they have in pregnancy and birth documentation, etc., to be more inclusive. And I feel like this is the point really where I need to direct you to Freddie's Instagram, because if, like us, you're like, oh my God, I want to be best friends with Freddie, at freddie.mcconnell is his Instagram account. So Freddie with a Y. So at Freddie McConnell, double C, double N, double L.
Oh, easy to remember.
Easy to remember, Freddie McConnell. Since I did the interview with him, he is a constant education to me on trans issues, not just kind of pregnancy, baby related. But with that in mind, and again, I have really mixed emotions on this, because I was hoping that at this point in the podcast, I was going to be saying to you, Camilla, guess what? Freddie is having another baby. But Freddie was having another baby. And not long after I recorded the interview with Freddie, he posted on his Instagram account, he was having a baby. And I commented like, oh my God, congratulations. This is absolutely amazing. And I said to him, no wonder you were coy in the interview about when the plans were, what was going on. However, Freddie then lost the baby.
Oh, that's so sad.
So incredibly sad. But again, his experience of all of that happening, he's written about. So he has a column in Vice magazine called Dad Bod, and started this column at the start of the journey of going through the process of trying to have baby number two, finding out that you're pregnant, and second column was then having to write about losing the baby. Which I can't even imagine. And I feel like if there's an issue with having inclusive language in trans pregnancy, then a miscarriage in that situation, I feel like there should be even more sensitivity around stuff like that. So if you enjoyed listening to Freddie's conversation and you want more, he's also the star of a docufilm about his pregnancy called Seahorse, which we didn't even get time to talk about, but links to that and so much other good stuff from him on Instagram at freddie.mcconnell. Follow my journey and tell us about your own on social media. We are at To Baby or Not. If you rate and review this podcast, not only will it hugely help us out, but it will mean that labour or no labour, drugs or no drugs, you will one day go to that magic, magic place.
Next time on To Baby or Not To Baby.
I was getting to 35, 36 and I just wanted a baby all of a sudden. And we tried and it went very wrong.